throughout the project, I created $60,000 in equity and forced depreciation. So that is really kind of what I consider the payday. Even though I can't live off of it today, it is definitely worth the work I put into it, even if it's $100 a month cash flow.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am Andressa Gadelli.
Are you wondering if the Burr method is still effective in today's market, even with high interest rates?
Well, today we have Jessie Lang. She grew her portfolio from 11 properties to 70 using only the Burr method. She's going to dissect the adjustments that she had made when underwriting deals, and most importantly, what are the other factors that she's taking consideration when analyzing a deal. So Jessie, you went from 11 properties to 70 properties using the Burr method. Things have changed since 2021, and we want to know, what adjustments have you made in order to continue using this strategy successfully?
Yes, such a great question. So the adjustments that we've made, obviously, I was able to cash out almost every refi back in 2021, and it was, you know, really fantastic times to be a real estate investor in Columbus, Ohio. Since then, of course, rates have changed. There's more competition. But the thing that has really kept me going is the long-term view that we're in a booming market. And even if cash flow isn't the greatest today, real estate is a long-term game. And I'm looking at the 10, 20, 30-year projections. So that keeps me going strong.
I'd love to dive into like a recent project if we can, meaning like I'd love to understand that the example you just shared, I'd like to understand that specifically. So do you have it'd be great to like walk us through a recent project that's happening, you know, last 3-6 months. I'm curious to understand, you know, your perspective and what does it look like how did you analyze it? What does it look like from a cash flow perspective? And I'm assuming all in Columbus, Ohio?
Within an hour of Columbus.
Okay. Yeah. So take a project if you don't mind. I'd love to dive into that and we can kind of dissect it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I actually just did a postmortem that we do internally on a deal yesterday. And so this one's fresh in my mind. We bought it in February of this year, so 2024. And it was about a 60-day renovation. Got it refinanced earlier this month. So really 5 months. All in on
what
the
type
time
of
frame.
Property, Jesse, if you don't mind?
Single family. It's a single family home in the neighborhood, the Hilltop, if you're familiar. It's, you know, kind of a hit or miss neighborhood, but this is in a super cute little pocket with cobblestone streets and all the houses are well kept, homeowners. It's a really cute little pocket, even though it's in the Hilltop.
So walk us through, how much did you purchase and what was the process? And I'm curious, like, how would you have approached the same deal in 2021? And what are the differences that you endured in 2024?
So I love the Burr method specifically because it can work at any price point as long as the numbers and the ratios scale up at the same rate. You know, as long as your rent will support the mortgage, then, you know, it can work anywhere. And so, or in any time frame. So 2020, I would have done the same deal. It just would have been on a smaller scale, a smaller purchase price, a smaller ARV, and, you know, a lower monthly rent. And so the deal still works today, even though the prices are higher because it's scaled up, you know, rent supports the mortgage. And so I bought it from a wholesaler. He actually made $30,000. I paid a $30,000 assignment fee.
Wow.
Yeah. And
now you paid $30,000 and it still worked. Okay. Tell us more.
Still works. Yeah. He's a good wholesaler and I buy a lot from them and they get pretty competitive prices. So, bought it from a wholesaler. It's a single family. We paid $92,000. Original ask.
I'm going to Ohio.
Jeez. Okay. Well, $92,000.
I'm going to freaking Ohio. Tomorrow.
Let's go.
Come on down.
On our way to Vegas. We're going to Vegas, not to have fun, but for a workshop, and we'll go on the way. So walk us through. It's $92,000. You paid a $30,000 wholesale fee. What size of the property is it first? I'm curious. How big are we talking? How many bedrooms?
Three bed, one bath.
Okay.
Full unfinished basement. All the mechanicals are in the basement. That's really common for us. So everything above is living space. It's about 1,250 square feet.
Small. Okay.
Yep. Two stories. I call it the Columbus special. It is the same style of house that we have throughout the whole city. So buyers are familiar with it. Renters are familiar. It's very congruent to the neighborhood, to the rest of the city. We really love to buy in congruent neighborhoods where all the houses, lot sizes look the same. Because if I can figure out what the value is when it's done, so can my appraiser. And it helps like reduce the risk of the project.
Okay, so you said 60 days on the rehab, and how much was it?
So rehab was about $48,000. And so we had a hard money loan that was 90% of the purchase price and 100% of the rehab. So altogether, our loan was about $131,000.
Dissect a little bit of the loan for us in terms of interest rate and points.
I am using Kiavi, who has been a great nationwide lender for us. I'm on their pro program, so we get a little bit of preferred terms. It's a, you know, 2-week close. They've done as quick as 7 days and pay 1 point and 12% interest. And then there's, you know, your doc fees and all that.
Sure. So what was the ARV of that property?
So we underwrote it at 200, which is what all the comps were saying. And then just earlier this month, we had the full appraisal done at the refi, and it came back at 215.
So at 215, how much you are cash flowing?
I will say, so the cash flow is not super exciting. We're at about $100 a month. But throughout the project, I created $60,000 in equity and forced depreciation. So that is really kind of what I consider the payday. Even though I can't live off of it today, it is definitely worth the work I put into it, even if it's $100 a month cash flow. And that's after we account for maintenance, vacancies, and CapEx.
Jesse, I think that's interesting. So you've made this business decision based on your goals and saying this works. And it's almost like check boxes. I envision like a check, like, If it meets this, this, and this, because if it didn't yield $60,000 in equity, and you've been like, maybe I'm not going to do this. So anything else we're missing in that checkbox? It says women are listening saying, do I do this deal or not? And that's a big question that so many are struggling with. And it's not a like yes or no, right? It depends. But for you, what are the other pieces? So you have immediate equity that you've built into the property. Go through any other important criteria for you as someone who's scaling.
So our big yes or no factor, if we move forward on a deal, is how much money is left in the deal at the time of refi. So that's a big tick on the buy box. And so when I was starting in 2021 with the Burr method, I was underwriting where if I couldn't pull all of my money back out, it wasn't a deal. Okay, that's not true today, just 3.5 years
later. And I think a lot of people are not doing it because they are still thinking that and expecting a high cash flow.
Yeah, you can't really. I mean, maybe you can have both. You can have your cake and eat it too. But right now, we're in a highly appreciating market. And so I'm willing to take a haircut on cash flow because of the appreciation.
That's really interesting. And there's always a... I feel like when I got started, like back in the day, 20 years ago, right? I'm like aging myself, can't see my gray hair. But I feel like what we were taught was it's not about, okay, what's the strategy? What's the long-term play? And it's like, it's almost like a chess game. You're moving the chess pieces to get to an ultimate wealth building and financial goal. What I was taught back in the day, because I'm 95 years old, is that it's only cash flow. It's only cash flow. And so I feel like that was something that was always, every meeting I went to was like, if it's not making, you know, $800 in cash flow, it's not a good deal. It's not a good deal. So I think that was taught back then. And I think there's always a place for like a strategic move here so it could get to me my greater goals. So that's interesting. So you did the deal. It appraised for more. Tell us about how you're actually, what's the strategy? Is it a long-term tenant? Is it are you doing another creative strategy to increase your rent income? Or what's your actual customer?
My goal at the moment is pure acquisitions. Cash flow, of course, you know, I could rent by the room. I could short-term rental. I could do all these different strategies, but they for us and the systems we have built are not scalable. We love long-term, happy, healthy residents where I can increase rent on an annual basis to, you know, what market rent has gone up to and keep people long-term. And so that's scalable. And that allows me to focus my energy on buying more because, you know, and you have long careers in real estate and you're still buying, but there's only so long that I will do the Burr method over and over and over before I want to do something, you know, more development or more interesting. Not that it's not interesting, but like, it's very repetitive.
At some point you're like, I need something more stimulating.
I think I have a couple more years of heavy buying with the Burr method until I have the flexibility and ability to go do something more exciting.
It's interesting you say that you look at all these different strategies and by on paper you probably could increase your income. You're choosing not to because you're looking to where is my energy and time best spent. And I think that's an interesting point. I think that's a fair point. Because, you know, we could all brainstorm and increase that rent right now. Like, hold on, are you maximizing this asset? Are you maximizing this? I think there's a place for that.
I want to play devil's advocate right now, right? For the women that are listening, it's like, I love those criteria that you put out, the equity that you build and your long-term goals. That being said, that $100 cash flow makes me very anxious and nervous, right? Because then they go on their list of, well, there is a higher CapEx or the tenant destroys something or I need to evict the person or. And it goes on and on. For you, Jesse, how do you like mitigate that risk? What have you put in place in case something happened? You're not in a situation where you are having to inject capital to this property for a long time.
Great question. And there's actually a couple of things I do to mitigate the risk of a low cash flow. And so first is the beauty of the Burr method is that we are planning for 10 years of low CapEx maintenance. So we're redoing the roof, windows, all the mechanicals. You know, if they're going to potentially go bad in the next 10 years, we are doing them during the big renovation. So we have 10 years of ideally very little, you know, heavy maintenance. Of course, you're going to have your day-to-day stuff. But then the day-to-day stuff we actually account for. So I'm saying $100, that's after 5% vacancies, 5% CapEx, and 5% maintenance. And so we actually pull out 15% of the gross every month. So technically the cash flow is higher, but that I underwrite with the net, net, net. And so we do account for money in separate bank accounts on a monthly basis. That's the second way. And then the third way is, you know, I'm really running my business on a portfolio basis. And so even if one property has $100 a month cash flow, the others, you know, we're not looking at them on an individual property unless I'm needing to make a business decision related to a sale or a refi. Then we look at something like location based, but overall it's portfolio based. And so we're still profitable because I was able to buy some in the past and, you know, others have, you know, lower interest rates and all that. And then fourth bonus reason is that I really believe even at $100 a month, the market is going to change. Our values are going up. Interest rates have the potential to come down, you know, debatably a little bit more. And if I need to refi again in a couple of years, I can do that. And so if I don't control the asset today, even at $100 a month, I don't have the option to, you know, like Liz said, it's a chess game. I don't have that piece to play with in the future if I don't own it today. So I'm willing to take that $100 a month risk to own the asset.
I really like this approach of looking at your portfolio as a whole versus expecting every single property that is inside your portfolio to be a home run, right? I'm not saying that get a property that it's underwater and it will be underwater 10 years down the road, even though if the interest rate goes down. But I like that you're looking at a holistic and strategically you're making the long-term play versus the immediate. I think that like the 2020-21 fever where you got to pull everything out now. So you feel good about it. And then you need to have a high cash flow and then cash flow beautifully 2 times more because you are doing a short-term rental or a midterm rental. And I think that people are very, very frustrated right now because they are not adjusting the rules of the game. And they want this like drive-through, like immediate McDonald's. Like I order it and I want 5 minutes later, I want my meal. So I buy it and 6 months later, I want my whole money back and I want a cash flow. We are playing a long-term goal right now. And I think that a lot of the skill set that is required right now is going to differentiate who are the true like wealth builders from the people that are just buying it because they have the necessity to buy something, even though if that doesn't make any sense. So before we talk about like your future plan with your portfolio, you talk about Ohio and this like little pocket. What have you found? Right? Because I bet you made some mistakes on your journey of buying properties.
One or two, right?
Like, what were like the biggest pitfalls that you have made in your journey when purchasing and underwriting properties using the Burr method?
Hands down, the biggest mistake that I have made to this day is selling any property I've sold. Each one had some strategic, you know, purpose at the time. I actually started in real estate in 2013 as an accidental landlord. I got serious and went full time in 2018. And I was a pure wholesaler for 2 years. I was doing direct seller marketing. I was only selling all of my contracts because I didn't have the belief that I could keep them. So my biggest mistake is selling all those freaking contracts in 2018. Oh my gosh. I look back at some of the numbers and I'm like sick to my stomach. If I had known what I knew even a few years later, I would have $10 million on my portfolio.
So that's interesting. So let's go there. I'm curious to dissect that with you a little bit. What was your mindset at the time that you couldn't do the Burr method or another strategy? You didn't see how it was all going to kind of, you know, you didn't know how it was going to unfold. What was the limiting beliefs, if you will, at that moment for you to just keep in that role of wholesaling versus maybe transitioning?
So I literally didn't even know the Burr method existed. I thought you had to buy with 20% down. And so that's how I acquired those first 11 is the 20% down. And I thought you had to use conventional financing. I didn't know about hard money. I didn't know about any of these things. So I was bringing contracts in, but they had to close fast. And I couldn't close fast because I didn't know these lenders existed. And so like that is really what it is. Not that I guess there was some limiting belief as well, but it was more just the actual tangible skills.
Knowledge and skills. Yeah.
There was some belief. I was coming out of a W-2 job that I was paid far below my worth. And, you know, it was a little bit of a challenge, a hit on the ego. And so I didn't really believe like I deserved it or I could do it or that, you know, it's invest her, right? That women, I had never seen a female role model in my life do anything that I even had half a dream that I wanted to do. And so, yeah. And so I really did it. It was both the belief and the skills together that I just thought I had to make all the money that I could from selling contracts and that I was going to, you know, ride off into the sunset. And that was not the case.
So knowing what you know now, what would you have either mindset wise as well as actual skill wise, what would you have changed? What could you have done to maybe script something different?
I had too much of a focus on cash in my pocket because, you know, I'm a very frugal person just naturally. And so I don't even know what I thought I was making all that money for because I wasn't buying cars or purses or houses.
You weren't getting the Lamborghini?
No Lamborghini. I drive a Prius. And so I was like just squirreling it away, which it turned out to work out really well because when I did start keeping real estate, you know, I had some funds to do it. And so I wish I would have just known more at that time was getting in the right room with people who are normal, just like me. I thought that if you were going to make money in real estate, you had to be flashy and fancy and all this stuff. And I started going to our local RIA here in Columbus and was introduced to like just totally normal people who were very successful with long-term rentals. And it took me a while to figure out that that is actually the path to like wealth and not just income.
I think that's a big deal, right? Because there's a difference between being rich and wealthy. I heard this another day that like poor people have things, so they look rich. And then wealthy people don't want to have anything and they look like poor people because it doesn't really matter at the end of the day, right? So I think that's a mindset that goes along. Like, why do I need to have the cash? Do I really need that? Like, versus how can I build generational wealth so I can free up my time?
I learned the slogan, the millionaire next door. And once I heard that, I completely embodied, like, I was like, that's it. That is who I am. I just want to be the millionaire next door that really no one knows about.
And I think that, I don't know, but what we have experienced with women investing, it's a more holistic approach, right? You're talking about in the future that you might want to do different things that stimulate you differently, more of different perspectives and building generational wealth. So it's not just about us, it's about the next 2, 3, 4 generations. So for you, when you think about the future, where do you see you moving with your current portfolio? Sell everything out and go to an island? Or what do you want to do with it?
No, I would be so bored. I don't think I could just sit still and like relax on an island. I'm too much of a doer.
Think about coconut, water, beach. A lot of people say that, right? I want to build wealth so I can travel and just relax at the beach. And I always say, and after that, like after a month, you're like, I'm done with the beach.
Yeah. So I give myself, I say 3 months. After 3 months, I'm like, okay, I got to do something. I actually, I had the privilege of traveling around the world in 2016. And it was incredible, life-changing experience. I met my wife and made lifelong friends, like core memories, changed who I was as a person. That said, about month 9 out of 12, I was like, I want to go home. I want to build a business. I want to do this, that, and the other. And, you know, people could look at you and say, how could you be bored? Not, I wasn't bored, but like, how could you want to stop traveling the world? And it's like, there is so much more to life and so much more. And do it. Please, please, please go out. I highly recommend travel if you can. But there is like, my adventure now is building businesses. And I want to take a 2-week vacation here and there, but like the thing that gets me excited on a day-to-day basis is building my real estate business.
I love that. Yesterday I was having dinner with my son and he's like, what's your favorite place in the world? And I say, home. Yeah, my son asked me this like
a deep question. He's an old soul.
Some questions I'm like, for God's sake, I need to Google it. I do not know the answer to that. We need some further research on it. I don't know. And then he said that and I said, home. He's like, no, but I'm talking about places. And I'm saying home, whatever home is my favorite place. So there isn't like a destination that like, oh, if I go to Italy to, you know, Positano and all of the, it's great. But I want to come back home to have my chai latte and my house and just have like, I think that when you go through different things in businesses and in your journey, you just appreciate the simple things in life and enjoy the journey versus, oh, once I have X, Y, and Z, then I will be happy. No, I'm enjoying the current relationships that I have, the friends that I have, all the different things that are happening now in my life. Of course, I'm damn excited about the future. And as you're saying, I get excited about building businesses, right? Having Alexa, my other friend that Liz knew, and we were talking about building different businesses. And I said to her, Alexa, you can sell freaking popcorn on the street, and I know it will be a freaking huge popcorn business, right? So we're talking about that. So I think real estate is one of the businesses. And I want to share with women out there that it doesn't really matter what industry you're in, you can build a very successful real estate business because it's just the skill set and the mindset. And
yes,
I love that you're sharing what's gone on. So are you going to sell your portfolio? Is that on the plan or you?
No. No, the projections in Columbus. I mean, you just had the conference in Austin. I grew up in Austin and I lived there for 28 years. I saw what happened. And when I drove in, I moved to Columbus without ever visiting. A W-2 job brought me here, moved here, never visited, drove in my Prius with my dog in the back and my car filled with stuff. I drove in, came across the bridge into the city and in 15 minutes was like, oh yeah, this is just Austin. Like it's just Austin 10 years ago. And so the projections, we're getting a new airport. Intel's coming. We're doubling our population in the next like 25 years. I'm not selling.
Why did you say, that's very interesting, because finding those up and coming markets is probably one of the biggest skills that people need to have to be successful. So what about Columbus made you say this is going to be Austin? What did it look like? Tell us more.
So on the emotional side of it, it's just the vibe. You know, the people are laid back, just an easy place to be, right? Everyone is generally happy. That's like the vibe and the not like intangibles. And then on the tangible side, capital city, it's a, you know, blue dot in a red state for the most part, like you big university. We have OSU, Austin has UT. Like very similar schools, similar industries, similar size population. We both have a river through downtown. Like, I mean, just they're just very, very similar in a lot of ways.
And I think that what you're saying in terms of people, that it's intangible. So I want to go a little bit deeper on that, because when we think about properties, we are thinking about who we are serving, who we are attracting. And I think when you say the vibe, it's attracting the next generation of people that expect certain things in a neighborhood, expect a better lifestyle for themselves. So I think that's a insight that a lot of people might not have when they are looking at just the numbers and the demographics. I think this is like a good thing as well. And during the conference, it's funny, during InvestorCon 2024, we had a panel and we were talking about numbers in Ohio because there is a new bank there, Fortuna, which is a women's bank in Ohio. And Lisa Berger, who is the founder, was at InvestorCon sharing about it. And we were in Ohio became the theme. And somebody from the audience was like, shh, stop talking about Ohio. We're going to attract a lot of people. So listen, ladies, forget about Ohio. Don't come.
Yeah, go somewhere else.
But you're saying again, right? So we are hearing over and over again, Liz. I think that we should explore that a little bit. But I think that it's much more than just like, okay, I'm going to go to this place just because the numbers make sense. I think, again, to the holistic approach that we're looking for, come on, let's make this journey a little bit more enjoyable. Also, is this a place that I want to invest? Is this a place that I want to serve people? Does it fulfill my values, my needs as a state and the laws and what's happening around? So it's more from that holistic approach that we're looking
at. I was at a RIA event and there was a speaker about kind of the future of Columbus. And one thing that he said that didn't really occur to me, it makes sense once you hear it, but it's chicken or the egg as far as like the vibe and amenities of a city and then what businesses are being attracted here. And you have to have one to have the other, because you're not going to attract major industry if it's not a cool place to live. And then once the industry comes, more restaurants and bars and nightlife open up to support those people. And so we're really, really like deep into that cycle of cool city, of, you know, attracting big companies. And those big companies are then having, you know, people here and the population growing to have more bars, restaurants, nightlife. And family friendly as well. Yeah.
I love that. I want to share this as a tip for everyone listening. I was having a conversation with one of our sponsors, one of the companies that was at InvestorCon. And I was talking with them. I said, yeah, they're like, we got a lot of leads. Your women are all playing in the arena, like active investors, like so impressed with the quality of women there. But there was something about your conference. There was this beautiful vibe at your conference. So I'm like, tell me more. Cause she used that exact same word. And when she explained it, it comes down to the community, which comes down to the people, which comes down to the people, your customer ultimately, right? It's the people that you're serving. It's the people you're around. And so as we talked about what that vibe was, and she explained it, there's a giving, there's a take. These women were all really active. They were fun, but serious. They wanted to learn, but they were able to enjoy themselves. Like we talked about it for a while because I was super curious, right? As one of the hosts. So I want to say that to everyone as you're listening to Jesse share a little bit about the vibe of a community is that vibe equals community, which equals people. It's ultimately the people that make up the community that makes up the vibe. So what is about that? They're attracting people that are retaining people. It's really simple, right? To think of it in that way versus it being like vibe is out there. I have no idea what it is. I'll never get my hands on it. I disagree because it comes down to the people. And you're right. It's as that grows, the amenities, the coffee shop, the companies are all coming. So that I would say is a huge tip when you're assessing markets. It's not this intangible, like I can't get my hands around that. Actually is incredibly important. And then the data backs that up, the jobs, the population growth. Are people coming? Are they leaving? You know, so it's super important. I just wanted to put a pin in that there for everyone listening. Jesse, this has been great. Love what you're doing. Love what you're up to. Where can the ladies listening learn more about you and follow you along your journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So I host a Facebook group. It's called Unlock, Learn to Buy and Manage Long-Term Rentals. And I go live every week with free trainings. We do case studies. We bring on experts on every topic you can imagine around real estate. A lot of free giveaways and all that. So our Facebook group is the best place to find me. It's Unlocked, Learn to Buy and Manage Long-Term Rentals.
Awesome. You guys will find all this information on our show notes. Jesse, thanks again for coming to our show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion, so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.